Welcome to Listen to Older Voices, a program produced for Uniting Melba and podcast through the Toorak Times. It's always a pleasure to bring you, through their stories, the life and times of older people in our community. All very interesting, all very different, and all very entertaining. This is a special Baby Boomers edition. This is part three of a four-part program featuring the life and times of Marcy Jones. Hello, I'm Rob Greaves, and it's a pleasure to host this program that explores some of the life of Australian vocalist Marcy Jones. Over the past 2 weeks, we've learned that Marcy's desire to be a singer and performer goes back to her early years in a music-oriented family, where she would perform on the family table. At the age of 15, circumstances resulted in her singing with the Thunderbirds, and from there, her career exploded with both solo performances and performances with Marcy and the Cookies on both TV, local dances, and national tours. Having formed a deep relationship with Aussie heartthrob Normie Rowe, they become engaged, but a series of circumstances tears them apart. As we all learn, that friendship has not just survived right through until today, it has grown. This week, we learn more about her family and her deep connection with it, and how she connected with Murray Robertson of the Thunderbirds, who is now her life partner. So many stories, which include, but are not limited to, her business relationship with Olivia Newton-John and Koala Blue. We pick up now with Marcy talking about her return to Australia from the UK without her friends and backing singers, the Cookies. Was that the end of Marcy and the Cookies?
Well, it was for a little bit. And then when they came home bit by bit, we started doing a few more shows together. And that sort of happened over the years, 80s, 90s, into the 2000s. We've picked it up on different occasions and ran with a few shows.
But it was the end of the full-time arrangement.
Yeah.
So you've come back to Australia. Did you feel a sense of relief when you got here?
Yes. Got into my bed with my cat sleeping across the top of my head and my mum, oh, I was so glad to be home.
Right.
You know, it was a great adventure and we worked in Spain and we worked all throughout England and we worked everywhere, all through the east, far east, and it was fantastic.
So the experience was great, but the outcome wasn't quite there.
To go over there and to really make it, you've really got to stay and just be prepared to stay and just...
And an element of luck.
A lot of luck.
You know, you mentioned Mick Hamilton. I've spoken with Mick and he, and you know, we all know he's very talented.
Yeah.
He went over with a lot of talented people. It still didn't happen.
No.
You've got to have the luck and the talent.
It didn't happen for Norm.
No, that's right. Well, it didn't happen for most groups.
I mean, Norm had records over there and worked and they loved him, but it didn't really...
Okay, you've come back from a rather disappointing outcome in England. Things aren't working out with Normie. Do you go into some form of self-doubt or do you get straight back into music?
No, I'm a really positive person. My glass is always half full. I will jump in the deep water or jump off the cliff because I figure, how will I know if I don't have a go? I'm one of those sort of people. And I think, cut a long story short, you know, Norm married Sue and they had Adam. And then I married Michael and had, Michael was, I think, 20, how old was I? 27. I had Benjamin at 29 because I was getting older.
Was that a big moment for you, having your first son?
Oh, yes. I wanted my children. Yeah. You know, I wanted, Beau was born when I was 32, but I lost my mother on my birthday, which was about a month later. She just dropped dead with a massive stroke, 59 years old.
But it would have been a shattering moment.
It was terrible. So I brought home Beau and lost my mother. My mother was my best friend. And Winnie, she really was and very gentle woman, very ladylike, unlike me. I'm afraid I'm like her mother and my father. So anyway, probably that's why I'm more of a survivor. But my children, Benjamin now is 40, coming up 44 this year, and Beau is 41. And they were little devils and I had to watch them all the time, but mother had a big stick. I never really cracked it at them, but I broke many, many wooden spoons on the bench. But they were just little boys that were into everything, and I thought to myself, well, they're like me. I have to have eyes in the back of my head, but they're great guys, warped sense of humour like their mother. And they're really lovely men and lovely, honest gentlemen.
Did they inherit your love for music?
Yeah, they do. They love music. Beau plays drums with his band. Beau does. In fact, that's how I cracked three ribs. I fell off the back of his drum stool last week.
Words sometimes escape me.
And went down on the floor, and I cracked three ribs trying to show my three-year-old grandson a few moves. But anyway, he came and kissed me on the lips and he said, "Ouchie, Grandy." Oh. I said, "Ouchie, Leo." Anyway, I've got three grandsons. I've got two beautiful daughter-in-laws. Love my girls. I have two stepsons, my partner Murray's sons, and they're gorgeous, gorgeous men who have beautiful wives who I adore.
So you've got this beautiful, very extended family.
They're just all lovely. Not saying they all get on, but they're all lovely.
Family. Family.
And Lisa is my stepdaughter-in-law. Her parents are Italian Maltese. We have fabulous Christmases with them. On another side, Carolyn is French. My other daughter-in-law, Louise, her dad's English, her mum's Malaysian Chinese.
Wow.
And Emily's old English stock, I think. But we can all get together as a family and have a great time. Isn't that amazing?
It is amazing, especially in this day and age where family units seem to dissolve very quickly and very easily.
Well, my stepson's... I get on very well with. I'm the wicked stepmother. I always say, it's the wicked stepmother here. Oh, yeah, right, Omar. But they're lovely people. I've got step-grandchildren who are beautiful and my little grandsons. And it's a bit of a melting pot. I always used to think when I was younger, I'd love a melting pot. We're all from different parts of the world and we all get in the melting pot and we're all happy together. But I think my family and my extended family know that I really love them.
And that's important to you, isn't it?
And they know that, yes. But I do love them.
Mm.
So, you know, I'm not out there saying to them, you know, causing a problem. I don't want to cause a problem. Why would I want to do that?
No.
I want everybody to be happy. And what could make me really happy was to make millions and millions of dollars so I could go and say, right, I'll pay off your house and your house, buy you a house, Beau, and pay off yours, Ben. There you go. That'd make me joyous.
But life is really like that, is it?
Oh, well, you do.
We have fantasies, but the reality is we work and we work hard, and you work hard. And
I do.
We come back to this period of coming back to Australia and...
Yeah, I had to start all over again on my own,
so
doing
it was just
clubs.
Marcy.
Yeah, Marcy Jones. Oh. I did clubs in Sydney. I did dances and clubs down in Melbourne. And, and I worked my butt off.
Listen to older voices. The magic of memories.
This is a special Baby Boomers edition.
So how did you guys meet?
Well, I met Murray when I was getting divorced, and I ran into Murray at a roast for Stan Rofe.
Right.
And I wasn't there with my ex-husband because I didn't like him at all by that stage. And I walked in with my girlfriend Charlene, my dear darling friend Char, who's gone to God nearly 6 years ago. And we walked in and we had our tight leather suits on. We were looking pretty sexy and pretty spiffy. And, of course, I'd gone through all the crap with the marriage, so I was nice and thin.
Yeah, yep. That's what. Not for the right reasons, but look, but still looking good.
But still looking good, you know. And anyway, I walked in and I went, oh, my God, Charlene. I said, that's the Thunderbird sitting down there. Oh, I haven't seen them for... I don't know how long that was. A long time, 20 years or over 20 years. I said, oh, and there's Murray Robertson. I said, oh, gosh, I haven't seen him since that night. He took me home and he was 20 and I was 15 or 21 and I was 15, you know, and I hadn't seen him since that time. And then they moved me after that to work with a new band, with a new singer, and that became Normie Rowe and the Playboys, you see. So I hadn't seen Murray in, I don't know, 25 years
right,
or something.
Long time.
And I'm looking down and I'm thinking, that's not his first wife. I'm checking it out. Oh, he must be with another wife. Anyway, cut a long story short, Murray and the boys started the All Stars. They started to work. He was working with that band then and doing shows at Alexander's, which was a big band restaurant, which was owned by my ex-husband and myself and Shirley Strawn. And so I was singing there with the big band.
Ah.
The All Stars came to do it and I sort of got to know Murray again. Anyway, things at home weren't all that great for him either. And so we sort of...
Circumstances brought you together.
Circumstances brought us together. Yeah, not for a while, but they did.
You mentioned you were singing with a big band. That's interesting because it takes me right back to the beginning of our interview where you mentioned that swing played a part in the early family life.
Yeah.
So here you are singing with a big band. Was that a different experience for you?
Oh, no.
No? No,
I'm just a singer, so I sing anything, basically. Now, some people are real folky. Some people are real rocky. I was one of those singers that you could give me – some swing to do. I write and record a lot of Celtic music of my own. My own work is quite Celtic. And then I trained as a classical singer. I was a lyric soprano. Then I went into singing pop music. You know, but I never did things like some people like to rock, some people like to roll. Wanda Jackson. Mm-hmm. I'd sing things more like Carolina moon keeps shining. You know what I mean?
And your voice probably survived better for it.
Probably. So yes. That was the sort of difference.
Oh, a big difference.
Yeah. But swing is a feel thing. Like it's too darn hot. It's too darn hot. You know, it's and I worked with 10 of the best musicians, 6 frontline, the top brass players in Melbourne at the time, plus Graham Morgan and, oh, here I go again, Danny Bourne. Anyway, they were the best band. They were the best. They were the old Channel 9 orchestra.
Right.
So the really old one, these were the second ones that came in. But fantastic. I'd just tell them what I wanted to do, Donnie, and write the music, and I'd turn up, and all the boys wore dinner suits, and I wore long, slinky, red sequin gown, all foofing out, you know. And it was good.
How long did that gig last for, roughly?
I did that for about 3 years.
That's significant.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
And it was great. I loved it. Loved every minute of it.
So how did fate move you out of that?
I got divorced. My husband, my ex-husband was playing around with one of the waitresses there. Oh, dear. And I basically said, sacco, or I'll put 2 bricks through your car. So he, his Jag Cabriolet, so he went in and sacked her. But anyway, you know, I tried to make it work for 3 years. It didn't work. Once you've lost the trust and the respect...
There's not much left.
Forget it.
Yeah,
you got to like someone to love them.
Yep.
So for me, I tried to keep it together for my kids' sake, but then later on I just didn't, so. And I left.
Left facing what? Because that's a big part of your life at that moment.
Yeah. Well, I had to have a job. So at that stage, we had brought Koala Blue to Australia in the period that the 3 years that I tried to make things work. Olivia wanted to, and Pat wanted to, open some stores in Australia. So we took on opening the first store, which was Koala Blue was in South Yarra, down in the Jam Factory, down in, what's the name of the street?
Chapel Street.
Yeah. And so we did that. Unfortunately, it was at a time when people had borrowed too much money and things sort of all collapsed, everything collapsed, all the businesses collapsed, mm-hmm. everything collapsed. So it went really great for 2 years. And I loved it. You know, I like people, you see. I'm used to talking to people when I'm working and stuff like that, so they all would come in. Beautiful, beautiful stuff. It was very sad the day the doors closed on Koala Blue. Mm. That's probably one of my biggest regrets, but, you know, it really wasn't my fault. The mothership went down in the States and they had too many stores, 64 stores all over the world. And even though only 20 or so stores were theirs, they've still got to make the stock for all the other stores.
So how did you connect with Olivia?
Olivia and I met doing the Go Show.
Right, so that far back.
Yeah. So Livy was...
And I should say for people listening, we're talking about Olivia Newton-John.
Yeah. Pat and myself and Olivia, we all met doing the Go Show. And we're still friends to this day.
That's great, isn't it, that you can keep those connections.
I just heard from her this morning. I just emailed her back this morning. Yeah. She's a great girl and we're great friends. And she once said to me, we took the horses up the back of her place in when she had her ranch, and we're riding around all the tops of the hills and we're talking about life, you know, stuff. And she said to me, she said, you know, Marcy, you're the most honest person I've ever met.
Probably something she sounded like she valued greatly.
Yeah, so that was nice. Probably I'm too honest.
That can be detrimental too, especially to you. Yes.
Well, it can. Yes. I have learned to shut my mouth on certain things and just think, oh, just let that go, you know. Yep. But I guess when I'm talking about me, and that's why I wrote my memoirs, Runs in the Blood, the only things I didn't put in my memoir were things that could hurt other people.
Okay.
I don't want to hurt other people. You don't write a memoir to... You can dish the dirt on yourself, but you don't dish it on other people.
Listen to Older Voices, where stories from the past find a home in the present.
You really, it's quite obviously that you really, loyalty means a lot to you.
Loyalty means everything to me.
Yes, that comes across very strongly.
You don't have loyalty, what do you got? I always said to my children when they were younger, certain things, you know, that go on when kids are young and you've got to teach them a few lessons. I said, you lie to me. I once wouldn't let my kids, grounded them, that's the word, for 6 months because Benjamin told me an important lie. And I said, this is not for what you did. This is because you lied to me.
Important for you to teach your children the same values that you have.
That's right. And it's like my mother, she said, you can tell me anything. And half the time if I did something, I have to tell her before I went to bed or I couldn't sleep.
Mm.
I mean, later on there was a few things she didn't find out about. Oh, dear me, but I paid for those in other ways, in other respects. But you've got to have, I said to them, there's nothing you can do that won't stop me loving you. I mean, the worst things for me in life are people that hurt animals and hurt children, and they should be locked up forever.
Because they're two things that really can't defend themselves.
No, they can't. That bloke they've just let out, that pedophile they've just let out, he should never have been let out. Never, never, never. I don't care how many bells and whistles he's got on him. He's still got to live somewhere. And there are children everywhere. But anyway, that's my
You were very fortunate in your career, starting at a time when music was exploding in Australia, and you've been at the forefront, and there would be very few venues in the 60s and 70s that you didn't play, and probably some that I've never even heard of.
Yeah.
However, like your compatriots that also came through that period with you, have you found as it's getting older, it's getting more difficult to get work because the venues aren't there?
Oh.
Or is it because people don't relate to the age group you're in anymore?
No. I think the people that have grown up with us, they still want to see us work. They're our age, or they are bringing their kids with us who are now in their 40s, who maybe grew up on the music and love it. There's still an audience there. You know, I do the occasional morning melodies, and, you know, I'll fill the place with men and women my age, and I'm a bit naughty because I can talk about all sorts of things now because I'm 74.
Liberating age, isn't it? It's a liberating,
you know, I'll
age.
Say to them, this is a really great song. Does it remind you when you used to go to the drive-in and get in the back seat for a little shaggy, shaggy, shake? And they always put your hands up, you know, and they all go, ooh. I said, well, I did. We all did. But the thing, well, probably some that didn't, but we had a great growing up period, and I think when we all get together, we all know these things. So it's like you don't have to explain anything to anybody, you know? And the audience is wonderful. And I think as long as you can still sing and as long as you can still carry the show. I'm doing a couple of shows with Norm this year. We're doing one at the MIMO Theatre with Bobby Bright also. And that'll be lovely. The show's called In the Beginning, and it's about, you know, when you first recorded and when that used to be, what was it called? Telly something, something, something. I don't know. Bill Armstrong was his first studio. And it'll be just wonderful. And we'll pack that place.
Oh, you will.
We've got another show for the Vietnam Veterans on the 11th of the 11th down at the Vietnam Veterans Museum down in Phillip Island. That's been sold out for months. We could have done another show down there. And I think the older we are getting and the older our audience is getting, sooner or later, there's so many of us that have gone already.
Yes.
And if they don't want to come to see us and remember the songs and remember the old days and I remember meeting you at da-da-da-da-da-da-da and they're fantastic memories and I'm so blessed to have been a part of this. How fantastic is that? I was there. I was on the stage with all these people, all my mates, but all these people. Blimey, what an amazing adventure.
Something that you couldn't have conceived of is that young girl sitting around the family playing spoons and things, could it?
No. Standing on the table, singing You Are My Sunshine and, you know, no. How amazing is that to have been in the forefront of the teenage pop industry in this country to be one of the top female singers? I mean, there were so many. There was a lot. Little Patty and now I'm going to really be awful. And Yvonne Barrett and Pat Carroll and Olivia and Lynn Randall and Joy Lemon and so many girls.
I'm going to disagree with you with one thing there. There were so many, but in proportion to the number of male artists in groups and singers, it was still proportionally smaller.
Oh,
so
very
it's very
small.
Important that these girls are remembered. Because
so many of them are gone now.
Yes, yes.
You know, I know I've missed quite a few there, so don't yell
no,
at me.
No.
But I know who they are. Laurel Lee, Dinah Lee. Oh, Bev Harrell too.
Yes.
They'll keep coming. But we were the girls that went out there and opened all the roads for all the younger women that have come in over the last, well, I've been singing for nearly 60 years next year, so for the last 40 or 50 years that have all come up since us, and today they're writing their own music and they're going out there and doing their own stuff. Oh, I'm so proud of them.
I only hope that they can sit back and recognise the doors that you've opened for them. I am talking about you and Bev and all the other ladies you've mentioned.
They probably won't. But that's why I think everybody should know about the Australian pop industry from the late 50s into the 60s. They shouldn't be educated on that music because, you know, if I hadn't have stood on that stage and ducked eggs and tomatoes, I wouldn't be here today.
In the final program on the life and times of Marcy Jones, Marcy shares some of her philosophies and beliefs on a range of issues that cover relationships, religion, and the environment, as well as talking about her latest album, Marcy Jones Anthology. That's next week, the fourth and final program on the life and times of Marcy Jones on Listen to Older Voices. Listen to Older Voices is produced by Rob Greaves at the Melbourne Community Support Program. Listen to Older Voices is supported by financial assistance from the Commonwealth Government through the Commonwealth Home Support Program and is podcast to you through the Toorak Times and TAG.